This is Where We Meet, sharing conversations from New Mexico and beyond. I'm Chelsea Reedy, and this show is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Taos Center for the Arts would like to recognize that it operates on the homelands of the Red Willow people of Taos Pueblo. We'd like to honor the importance of Native and Indigenous cultures within our community and within the land we live, learn, and exist on. In this concluding episode of a two-part series, we dive back into the counter-educational methods created by La Academia de la Nueva Raza and Paulo Freire. In the late 1960s through the 1970s, Tomás Atencio and Facundo Valdez, with others, sought to build a body of knowledge from the stories and folklore of the Chicano people of the Southwest. Based on a process corresponding to Plato's Academy, La Academia de la Nueva Raza created an alternative educational process that uncovered and compiled the knowledge of the community, termed El Boro del Barrio, or the gold of the neighborhood. The group called for the maintenance of traditional ways of being, nurtured in appreciation for family, community, and acts of mutualism. Through the art of conversation, La Academia created its own educational model based on the concept that learning is derived from life and historical experiences, both personal and communal. Members of the movement documented the oral history, personal narrative, oral literature and folklore, art and music of their communities. These insights were linked to the widely recognized local space of dialogue, La Resolana. The term Resolana comes from the Spanish word resol, the reflection of the sun. Resolana is the sunny, usually south-oriented wall where people can gather in wintertime, a space of warmth and community. For Atencio and Valdez, Resolana is a space that holds much more. It is both a place and a process. La Resolana is a pathway to knowledge, a relationship between thought and action in everyday life, and a metaphor for enlightenment and awareness for those within La Academia and their communities. In 1972, Paulo Freire, considered the founder of critical pedagogy, was invited by La Academia to Abiquiú, New Mexico, to share his ideas. For Freire, critical pedagogy refers to questioning relationships of power in education with the goal of realizing and revealing the factors that prevent humanization. In everyday life in northern New Mexican towns and villages for centuries, learning and doing were inseparable. Yet, during the industrialization of educational institutions, learning became separate from practice. With this separation, learning became a transference of information from those who had it to those who did not. Freire's focus on an action and a reflection, dialogue and education, were foundational to reshaping the revival of La Resolana for La Academia. Now we'll hear from David Fernandez, a writer, speaker, and board officer with the Northern Rio Grande National Heritage Area, about the discussions had by La Academia and Paulo Freire in 1972.
I think you were part of some or all of those meetings, and I wonder, what was that like, those conversations in those meetings?
Well, that was, again, pretty interesting. This was, again, in the early 1970s, mid-1970s, up at Ghost Ranch. We would hold meetings out there sometimes, and somehow or other it was arranged for Paulo Freire to come in and speak to our group, and people listened very intently, and he did make a good impression on a lot of people, I think some of his ideas persist still to this day in the wider realm, and maybe even around here yet. He was somebody different. He was kind of famous and kind of controversial in his own way and such. And I know he enjoyed the visit, and I remember a pretty remarkable event. There was a lot of discussion and, comparisons of the situation of oppressed and colonized people in South America, Central America, to here. It was good. He, Mr. Freire, of course, in some way was on the run because he'd been encouraged to leave his native country, let's put it that way. And so he would be here, then there, and then there, I think, even in Europe, a couple of places for a while, and the United States. But he did come through here. And see, anything that stand out from that. I think the only thing that really stands out was that, you know, the discussion about the centuries of, let's say, colonialism, and I think even the word oppression was thrown around here and there like that, certainly for a lot of the Spanish people, and of course, even further back, but the native peoples. At the same time, other things were still going on, like the whole land grant struggle here in northern Mexico was going on, and reverberations from Reyes Tijerina, all these things were still going on, kind of all around. You could hear them echoing all around. I think even during that conference at Ghost Ranch with Paulo Freire, you might have heard a couple or three gunshots, rifle shots going off out in the distance, you know, for something else going on. It was a very, very interesting time. And we discussed the similarities and the dissimilarities between situation in a place like here in northern New Mexico and places further south where, colonialism was very, very strong and active. The relationship with the Catholic Church was brought up, for example. Paulo Freire's ideas of the base communities in areas where combination of Christian and conservative governments had really been putting people down for a long time, and even education. There was absolutely no room, for example, no room at all for critical race theory, for example, down there. It's always been like from the top down, pouring facts into numbed minds, and that would pass for education. But Paulo Freire's approach, and here in northern New Mexico, through Academia de la Nueva Raza, was also just to lift both sides up for engagement, set up venues for the longtime local peoples to meet with the people in charge for dialogue with a goal, you know. And sometimes that would happen. But yeah, we had interesting conferences here and around, including the famous one down at Ghost Ranch with Paulo Freire and all of that. And pretty interesting stuff going on all the time.
Freire's approach to learning and education encourages participation from the learners, be they the students or the teacher, a collaboration in the classroom opposed to an authoritarian space. This collaborative space allows learners to think critically and develop skills to identify injustices or abuses of power. Let's go to Dr. Hope Kitts, an instructor in the areas of critical pedagogy, urban education, and social foundations of education, who gives us an example of how critical pedagogy can be implemented in our schools and the importance that Freire's work still holds for our state.
I feel that it's so relevant for our state. We are such a rich state in the sense of culture, of tradition. But it's a state with very high poverty levels. And I think for that reason, that was something that Freire's education was directly connected to, was to questioning the who benefits from poverty and why is there poverty. And you know, the power interests that are served through poverty, I think that that is so relevant to our state. And yeah, that's why I feel so passionately about it, that it could actually have a real impact on students and families and their material conditions, to ask, you know, why is there poverty in the first place? How is it created? Who's benefiting from it? So I think it's a very relevant paradigm for our context. There's a film called It's Elementary, and it's a documentary talking about LGBTQ issues with elementary school students. And I just showed this to my class 2 days ago. And because we were having this conversation, they're all preparing to be elementary school teachers, but they're freshmen right now in college. And we're talking about anti-racism and whiteness and white supremacy. And a student said, I don't think I could do this with elementary school students. You know, I don't think they're ready. And we had a great discussion about it. And so that's why I showed this film. It wasn't about racism necessarily, but it was about like LGBTQ rights and issues as a community of people. And it was so interesting to see these little children in elementary school, first grade, second grade, already having knowledge about homophobia and discrimination, you know, and the film does a really great job of showing this and where they get this information. I think people tend to think of kids as unaware, you know, and we need to protect them and keep these controversial issues away from them. But I think it's often overlooked that students already know slurs for people. You know, they hear derogatory terms in music, on television, on the internet. And so they have this knowledge already about certain people who are accepted, certain people who are rejected. And so to not confront it, to not bring critical pedagogy in at a young age, is to just allow bigotry to go unquestioned, to not be talked about, to not have the light opened up onto it. So I definitely think that it is relevant for elementary school students, because they're picking up on so much already. And I think we have to give them more credit than we often do. And I think it goes back to like how we view school. And some people see school as intimately connected with society. And some people see school as about, you know, preserving a child's innocence and honoring what parents feel. But really, schools are intricately connected to society. And so what we do in schools, or what we don't do, if we don't talk about LGBTQ issues or white supremacy or ableism, you know, if we leave things silenced, they will never be challenged. They'll never change. They'll just exist under the radar and keep being reproduced. So I don't know. I think if we think about schools as like at the locus of social change, there's a good reason people don't want these issues to be talked about openly, because it could have a ripple effect throughout society one way or another, to talk about it or not talk about it. Frere says that it's not possible to avoid being political. If you're seen as being truly human, you're connected to the world, you're a part of the world, you're involved. So there's no such thing as being apolitical or neutral. A lot of times when we take a new approach and a new paradigm with a new philosophy and way of thinking, we have to reflect on ourselves too and think about all the ways that we have grown up in a system that's oppressive and what we value, what we think is important. So there's a lot of self-reflection in it too, in terms of questioning our own authority as a teacher. Which doesn't mean, I think there's a big misunderstanding too, which doesn't mean that it's just anything goes. I think that was another thing I found in my study, was that when Frere was critiquing what we think of as authority and saying, you know, the student becomes the teacher becomes the student, that was interpreted as, well, I can't just give up my power. You know, I can't just be willy-nilly, anything goes. And in a Teachers as Cultural Workers, another one of Federetti's books, he's very explicit about that's not what he meant at all. You know, he said, teachers need to have backbone. And that really sticks with me in terms of sometimes we think things in either or. Either I have all the power and the students have no power, or I have no power and the students have, versus a whole new way of thinking about power and not just giving it up or not having any power, but really thinking through the power that we have and how to use it in the best way and how to channel it, you know, for humanization and for students' benefits and society's transformation. So it's not just a giving up of power, but using it in a different way.
With the Chicano movement of the late 1960s, La Academia de la Nueva Raza joined in the quest to recover what had been lost to Mexican Americans. La Academia brought together the concepts of La Raza Lana and El Oro de Barrio, yielding a body of knowledge and encouraging experiential learning through storytelling. The knowledge that emerges through Raza Lana is reflexive in nature. Internally, it is a self-awareness process that deepens one's understanding of knowledge, including past experiences, sacred knowledge, or folklore. Externally, it reveals themes through dialogue and reflection. La Raza Lana revealed the buried knowledge of an older agrarian culture in northern New Mexico. The question is, what now? Let's go back to David Fernandez.
I think basically I feel that there's still a lot of room and opportunity for hope. And for the fruition of those hopes. I know that even to this day, I know there's kind of all the younger kids in school and the scholars and all this kind of pouring back over through some of the old papers and old tape recordings and things like that, the old cuadernos and things that were put out by Academia de la Nueva Raza and probably similar groups here and there like that. There's a strong interest in that, and I think therein lies a hope. What has kind of really clouded the issue big time is, in fact, the web, the cloud, too, there, with just every last, even infinitesimal to gigantic bit of information and false information, misinformation that's out there. The perpetuation of even some of the old things, say even the black legend having to do with the Hispanic people, or just misinformation about all the peoples, about the Pueblo peoples, the Spanish, the people coming in here too. And the web is wonderful. You know, it's around the world, and every night I look up to see the next batch of SpaceX satellites being shot up there by Elon Musk and all of his group to expand the web around the world. I think that can be exceedingly helpful to people, but also there still remain whatever, you know, from the different. Different purveyors, different parts of the world, different agendas who are still pushing their things through this very same cloud. And another part of the hope is that through education, through the schools, the high schools, and even the universities, people can take a good insightful, penetrating eye to all the information that is there and kind of discern the real living threads of the story of all of our story there. There's a hope there, but I think it's getting more complicated. The world is exploding in population. We have situations just bursting into flame all over the world too, and not helpful at all. And people spinning it every which way but loose everywhere, and. Even here, I give credit to those who are continuing to keep their vision on on life, on the story. Give credit to those who can take all the information, all the stories, even the most crazy, outlandish stories, out into the side of the community where the sun is shining bright, like we looked at in the old days, Lara Solana, and just see clearly. I mean, some of it holds still true and straight, some of it just wilts away, you know, in the heat and the blazing light of the sun, you know. There's very real hope there, and again, it springs from the heart. One thing that Paulo Freire and academia had in common was just recognition that a key even to dialogue, authentic dialogue, a key to authentic dialogue is willingness on the part of both the oppressor and the oppressed to look at some kind of a resolution, and even love. You know, that's that word is used quite a bit, kind of an essential kind of love that theoretically, or maybe not so theoretically, lives in each and every person in different group, and there are always some people wanting to climb over or to surmount the mayhem that's going on all over the place too, and whether it's physical mayhem or even just mental mayhem or you know sociological, all like that, and that was something very important. The work in Academia de la Nueva Raza and the work of people like Paulo Freire and of course all us good-hearted people in the world who would want to just be able to relate, you know, with a little bit of love and seeking a way out of the darkness into that side of the world, that side of the house where the light of the sun, you know, brings everything out. So.
Gratitude to Dr. Hope Kitts and David Fernandez for their time and insight. Where We Meet comes from Taos Center for the Arts in Taos, New Mexico, and is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Producers include Colette LaBeouf, Chelsea Reedy, Alice Morion, Ariana Cubillos-Vogler, and Joshua Aragon. Research and writing by Jacqueline Paul. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. On Where We Meet, we share conversations from New Mexico and beyond. Thank you so much for listening. Be well.